have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in the Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you was going to be this good, but it feels good!
Welcome on in, everyone, to the boardroom. We are joined by a very special guest here today. We've got a college basketball wizard, guru, however you want to qualify it. He's the founder of KenPom.com, the one and only Ken Pomeroy. Ken, thank you so much for joining us here today. We'll start with a very simple question. Why do you hate our team?
Why do I hate your team?
Yeah.
I think I love your team.
Oh.
My ratings have been very kind to Illinois.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I mean, we're just sort of poking fun at the fact where it seems like everyone is always like, oh, he hates our team, or the metrics always seem to oppose our team, or, you know, finding ways to be like, oh, you know, our team should be ranked higher.
Right. I think that was, yeah, I heard that from Illinois fans when the season started, because I had you like 18th or something in the preseason ratings, but haven't heard that lately. Mostly it's from other fans asking me, why is Illinois so high? So.
Oh, okay. Well, we can kind of get into why those
metrics. That's probably fair.
Yeah, that is
yeah, that is some of us wondering why we have five losses and are still ranked in the top 10.
Well, we can certainly get into that. But just in general, do you feel like this year is sort of harder to project outcomes based off of, you know, home court, very imbalanced schedules, COVID, other challenges like that?
It's been harder to predict so far, less due to home court, I'd say, and more just due to the, you know, COVID stoppages or some teams playing, and, you know, guys missing due to COVID or various other situations like that. When you look at like, you know, kind of the predictions and the accuracy of the predictions on my site, they've been a little bit worse than in a typical year. So that effect has definitely been noticeable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd imagine there's a lot of challenges that go into predicting a year like this.
Yeah, and like how often would you say, when we were kind of joking about it earlier, are people in your Twitter mentions or emailing you about how you're not respecting their team and not understanding that you have no opinions on these teams and that your ratings are just statistical ratings?
Yeah, it happens, but not very often, mostly because I don't encourage that behavior. So I typically don't, never found a good way to like engage those type of people. So I try to just ignore them more or less. You know, there's certain people out there that sort of like embrace that kind of dialogue. Like, I mean, Seth Davis seems to be pretty good at that when he, you know, releases his AP poll ballot and he kind of encourages people to come at him. But I try to discourage that and try to just ignore people. And so, so it still happens, but, you know, not as often as it could.
Sure.
Got it. And how do you feel about, say, like the new net ranking and them kind of factoring in some of your ratings, and how would you compare that to say the RPI?
Yeah. So, I mean, the net rating is an improvement over the RPI in that, the RPI really seemed to try to measure resume, which is good. Like that's what you want to measure, but the NCAA never had enough like confidence in it to use it in that way. So the net is, you know, more of a kind of a power rating like my system. I mean, by the end of the year, you know, you look at the rankings in my system and the net, and they're going to be really similar. So I'm not gonna say they like copied my work, but
hey, you could take credit. That's okay.
They modeled their system after a power rating, let's say.
Yeah.
And so that's I guess a step in the right direction in terms of if you're going to evaluate a team's resume, like it's nice to have like an accurate rating of a team's strength. So, you know, top 50 wins are truly against the 50 best teams in the country. So that's what the net provides now. So, you know, I think there's a lot of ways you can improve the tournament selection system, but going to the net definitely was a step forward from using the RPI.
Yeah. So I guess that's a step forward. How would you rate it out of 10 as in terms of your satisfaction, and what would you kind of move it to maybe be something that caters to what you believe in?
So, I mean, in terms of my satisfaction, I mean, I'm probably a hard grader, but you know, it's probably like a 3 or a 4 at this point.
Wow.
Better than the 1 yeah. that was the RPI. But.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they really should go to, you know, to me, I don't like the subjectivity of the process. I don't like having 10 people just, you know, pick their own at-large teams based on kind of their own subjective criteria. You know, we have enough, like, we've made enough advancements in college basketball analytics that we kind of know how well a team has played against their schedule and whether that, you know, is superior to some other team that's fighting for a bid. And so, you know, there's definitely a more objective approach that could be used to select teams. And it's going to take a while to get there just because there's other competing interests in terms of having a selection show and, you know, having like bracketology out there, like that kind of creates interest in the game. And so if you already know, like, if you have this formula that determines who gets into the field, like, you know, bracketology kind of gets blown up. So anybody that's doing bracketology is going to fight against it. So there's a lot of forces fighting against that kind of approach. So it's going to be a while till we get there, but I do think at some point we will get to a more objective approach to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least this year, they're kind of changing the way they rank teams without like the different geographical and locational ranking. So it's really going to be the top like 16, I guess, or the top 32. So that'll be kind of an interesting wrinkle. When you're filling out a bracket, do you pick purely based on your website's projections or do you deviate based on some calculated risks?
So I guess I should point out that I rarely do fill out a bracket.
Wow. Yeah, like
Darren or Val.
You and Darren are the only two people, only two Americans.
Right. Well, I don't know if I want to be in that crowd, but there are others besides us two fellows. But
sure.
Yeah. But, you know, part of that is that my ratings are kind of my bracket anyway. Like my reputation is kind of staked to my ratings. So, you know, I don't need another bracket out there, that also is my reputation. But when I do fill out a bracket, there are occasions where I get sucked into a pool with some friends or whatever. And, when I do that, I actually usually have a lot of fun with it. Like I don't just go with my ratings. I'll pick some upsets. I'll pick, you know, some wild teams getting to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. I usually pick too many upsets, because it's just more fun, I think, to, you know, have to have your entry like staked to like, you know, underdog teams winning. It's a lot better rooting for those teams than, you know, rooting for the favorite to go all the way.
For sure.
Yeah. I just want to thank you for 2019. That Virginia pick and some other deep runs helped me profit a little bit. So appreciate it.
Your check should be on the way. Glad I could help.
Although there certainly was a lot of good fortune on that Virginia run in order for that to work out. But
yeah, you don't say.
So on a related note, I feel like every year I get an argument with someone on Twitter. They're like, KenPom says we're top 10 or whatever. I'm like, yeah, KenPom also says like Florida's number 7. Like, do you really think Florida's number 7? So my question, I guess, is like, when can we trust KenPom? Like, should we wait a certain amount of time each year, or is there always just going to be like a few teams or a few variables that don't perfectly pinpoint what you think the actual ratings of teams should be?
Yeah. I mean, you always want more data. So, I mean, there's no like magic point where you should trust any power rating necessarily. But I do think also like on the flip side, it's useful from day one. Like it, you know, you look at, you know, the top 25 in my system and look at those teams, how they do the rest of the season, how they finish. Like, you know, 5 of those teams finish nowhere near the top 25, but you know, the other 20 are probably pretty good. And then, you know, the top 4 or 5 teams in my system, probably like 2 or 3 were like among the top teams in the country. So obviously you want more data, but I think the system's always useful. And from the start of the season onward, it's more useful as the year goes on. And I think what confuses people is that, you know, my system's designed to make predictions. You know, it's not designed to reward a resume. It's part of the reason why Illinois is in the top 10 or on the edge of the top 10 with 5 losses is that, you know, from a predictive standpoint going forward, like they should be pretty good. It's not just going to look at a team that loses a close game against a good team and drop them like AP voters would. It's going to say, hey, you played a really good team tough. Like that actually, even though you lost that game, that bodes well for the future. And that's the whole purpose there. So that's to whatever extent, like the ratings don't necessarily line up with people's intuition. It's due to that. Like they think, oh, you know, a team is, you know, like Duke is like whatever, you know, barely 500, but you know, I'm not going to rank them outside the top 100. They're still, you know, a decent enough team that when they play, you know, other ACC teams in their own building, like they're going to be favored against most of those teams. And so my rating tries to reflect that.
For sure. Hopefully your rating stays true for Illinois for the rest of the year. But speaking of this year, I'm curious, do you think this will be one of the rare years, like 2005, speaking of Illinois, where we actually get the number one and number two team in the championship?
Yeah, I mean, it is funny. Like, people are like, oh, I can't remember a year like this where, like, the top, you know, the two teams are so separated from everybody else. But, I mean, obviously, that 2005 year is really the one that comes to mind where, you know, you clearly had two teams that were better than everybody else. And then those two teams, like, made it to the title game. And I don't think people necessarily appreciate how difficult that is, you know, even for, like, the best team. You know, you just look at, like, the one seeds in a typical year, like, their chance of getting to the Final Four is like, you know, sub 50% or around 50%. So when you have two dominant teams like Gonzaga and Baylor, you know, I don't know what their chances are going to be to get to the Final Four. Maybe it's like 60% or something, 65%. I don't know. But you do the math on what their odds are both getting to the national title game, and it's not over 50%. I mean, it's going to be somewhere less than that. So obviously they're going to be the two overwhelming favorites to win it all, but the chances of them meeting in the title game are actually not that great. And if you have a chance to, like, bet with your friends about it, you should definitely bet against it, because in the long run, that's a smart play.
Yeah, I think the time before 2005 was 1975. So long time in between.
Of course, when we make it is when the other best team is also.
Exactly. That's an Illinois lock.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so going into Illinois, let's cater to some of our listeners now. We enter a pivotal four-game stretch where we're facing four teams in your top 24. You've given us actually a chance, greater than 50% chance, to win three of those four games against Iowa, Wisconsin, and Indiana. We're not favored to win, according to you, against Michigan. Let's start with Iowa. What do you dislike and like about both of these teams?
Well, I have to tell you, like, I think Iowa might be my favorite team in all of college basketball. Like,
okay, we can cut that part.
All right. We'll start that question over. Yeah, well, go ahead.
Well, I'm not saying they're the best team or anything like that. They're just my favorite team. Like, I love the fact that they're so, like, offense dominant. They're just kind of carrying this, you know, mediocre defense, which they've done for the entirety of the, you know, Luka Garza era. And they're just going to ride this guy to, you know, whatever heights they can achieve. And obviously there's some limitations to that approach. Like, they have imperfections. And it's just funny to me monitoring, like, the Iowa fan base, where I get the impression, like, they're just on the verge of, you know, total grumpiness, you know, with every game. Yeah. But to me, like, man, it's just a fun team, you know. It's like a once-in-a-generation team you got there. Just, like, accept the fact that this team has some imperfections. So, anyway, it's no secret. That's Iowa in a nutshell.
Where, they're, you know, so hateable, though. Yeah. Like, they're Jordan Bohannon.
I mean, it's easier for us to say that they're hateable, I would say, from a college basketball perspective. Like, they're fun to watch. They shoot a lot of threes. They make a lot of threes. Maybe they don't play a ton of defense. That's
speaking of
their
98th ranked defense by you. Can they take that defense to, like, a Final Four national championship? Like, have you seen that poor of a defense do that well in the tournament?
Yeah, it doesn't happen often. I mean, it's possible, like, the last time that happened was, you know, the Dwayne Wade Marquette team in the early 2000s. It's possible it's happened, you know, once or twice since then, but it's rare. It's very rare. But that's why they're my favorite team, right? Like, it's because they're such a wacky team, and it would be cool if they did it, because I think people are just, like, dismissing them and to some extent and thinking that they can't do it. And, you know, obviously we saw what happened, you know, when they played Gonzaga. Like, it wasn't a particularly close game. You know, when you're playing a great offense, like, you know, they're going to get shredded. And, you know, we saw what happened against Indiana when their offense isn't really functioning well. Like, they're going to lose those kind of games. So, you know, on the one hand, you think, like, yeah, they're going to get beat early, and that's certainly possible. But we'll see, man. I guess I just wouldn't underestimate them in terms of being, you know, a real player for the Final Four.
I would say having one counteract to having, like, a 98th ranked defense in the tournament is having arguably the best player in college basketball. That's probably something in a tournament that can counteract your poor defense, is having your guy just go off for, like, five games and just being that player of the year.
Yeah, for sure. He's a special guy, and he really doesn't get into any foul trouble, which, I mean, you know, speaks to the fact that their defense is very good. Well, you can speak to that as well, but I think he kind of avoids contact because he knows how important he is offensively. So, yeah, I think they're pretty good. I mean, you know, he obviously, the one game he really struggled was against North Carolina, and that's the type of game that. Type of team that he's going to struggle with, a team that has like kind of, you know, good length up front, and that's going to make it difficult for him. But, you know, there aren't like that many like teams like that, elite teams in college basketball that have that kind of NBA style length. So, mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see, but yeah, it's, he's a fun guy to watch.
He's good.
Besides Luka potentially disappearing, like, is there anything Io can do? Because right now he's fifth in your KenPom Player of the Year ranking. Is there anything Io can do to get back to be number one?
Yeah, I mean, it would more or less take an injury to Luka Garza at this point. I think, you know, everybody's kind of playing for second in terms of the Player of the Year race, and that makes some sense, you know. To a certain degree, like,
he's good. We'll admit it. No, as much as we don't want to admit it, like, he's just insane to watch. And the fact that he even came back this year, like, he's just so good. I don't know.
Yeah, he's just one of those, like, I was so lucky in that he's such a great college player, and he's not really, you know, going to be a great NBA player if he's an NBA player at all. So you just, you know, you kind of get lucky in that sense in the college game. These teams that, you know, are able to get these kind of 4-year players. You know, obviously, you find a great college player. A lot of the time, they're going to be a great pro, and they're not going to be there for 4 years. But, you know, in the case of Garza, he just fits that perfect prototype where, you know, it's kind of like Ethan Happ or whatever, where it's like the guy's just going to be there for his entire career. And maybe he'll be back next year. Who knows?
Oh, please. No, God. Please.
Put me out of my misery.
No. Oh, my gosh. All right, what about Indiana, Josh? What about that one?
Yeah, so the game after Iowa is against Indiana. There's a lot of, like, the media pundits talk about Indiana's, like, defense. They're trying, like, Archie's trying to emulate Virginia's defense. Like, is there anything that, like, you can see in the efficiency that's like that? Or, I mean, they're not even ranked in the top 25 in defense for you right now.
Yeah, they're 24th at the moment. And, I mean, maybe they just moved in there with a few
defense.
Games.
Their defense, though, is not.
No, their defense is 24th.
Oh, all right. Whatever.
Breaking news. Right. Indiana cracks the top 25 in KenPom defense.
At this moment, they're 24. That could change in a few minutes.
Something happened in the last 2 hours.
Yes.
which happens. But, I mean, they're like, you know, they're not as formidable as a typical Virginia defense. But, you know, I think they got obviously a lot of notoriety after the Iowa game, just the way that went. And so now people are, you know, oh, you know, pack line. But, you know, their 2-point percentage defense is 102nd. Like, you know, there's nothing that really pops out at you in terms of, like, the defense that you're like, ooh, like, this looks like a really nasty pack line defense. You know, it's a good defense, not a great defense. And it'll have its moments, but it'll also, you know, look pretty bad at times. So, mm-hmm. So I mean, you know, Indiana, by the way, another, like, I guess you could probably say this about every, like, good Big Ten team, but it seems like, you know, another fan base that's kind of tortured this year. You know, they look great one game, they look awful the next game, and I think that's kind of the nature of the Big Ten schedule. But it's definitely a team that you look at their numbers and, like, they're kind of good across the board, but not really great necessarily at anything.
Cool. And then moving into the third game in that stretch, Wisconsin, how do you factor in the fact that these guys are all like 30 years old and in their seventh year?
Yeah, I mean, that's always nice to have. You know, age is definitely a weapon in the college game, and especially, you know, the continuity that they have as well. Like, I mean, they're not just old, but they've all played together for a while. And, you know, when you have that many seniors in your rotation, especially in a year like this where, you know, practice can be disrupted or whatever. Not that that's really happened to Wisconsin, but obviously that can be an asset. So it's not a particularly sexy team. Like, you know,
it's classic Wisconsin.
I understand that Brad Davison is maybe not the most liked player in the league by opposing fans.
What was your next question there, Sam?
Yeah,
that
I was just going to ask, can you add a hateable rating for both them and Iowa?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, like, you know, I personally like Iowa more than Wisconsin. You know, I'm always going to, like, appreciate the offensive-minded, fast-paced team over the defensive-minded, slow-paced team. But That said, I do admire the job that Greg Gard has done. And obviously, you know, Wisconsin is no joke. Like, they're another very good team at the top of the Big Ten that's going to lose a few games, and their record maybe not won't look as good as you think kind of a top 10 team's record should look. But, you know, they're every bit like that good of a team.
Definitely. And then coming off of that, we've got Michigan. This is Phil Martelli's team, right? Like, he's actually calling the shots here, not Juwan.
And why do we say that?
Just a hunch based on his Final Four appearance. Juwan being in his second year.
Phil Martelli's been a head. Has he been head coach? Right.
Yeah, he was St. Joe's head coach.
Yeah, he was St. Joe's head coach for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you like noticed how his tenure ended at St. Joe's, but he obviously he had the Final Four appearance. That was amazing. But yeah, last few years at St. Joe's didn't go so great. Correct. But yeah. But
now he has talent that can help him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to give more credit to Juwan Howard here than Phil Martelli.
That's fair. All right. Well,
we're being honest. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Michigan's been awesome. Like, what can you say? They've been great. Obviously, had the hiccup in the second contest against Minnesota, but other than that, they've been pretty solid and just shown an ability to annihilate good teams, you know, on a consistent basis. Oh, so. Yeah. You know, they got my vote for being the best team in the Big Ten. Again, they'll probably have some losses coming up, although obviously their pause here, you know, they won't have any losses before they play Illinois. So
that'll be a fun one. Obviously,
they're not playing any games.
Yeah, hopefully they come out a little rusty. Yes. That was what was surprising was they didn't look that great in the non-con. I mean, they played Oakland in overtime and then kind of Big Ten just kind of slowly took on some of the lower ranked teams, didn't fall, and then have continued to, once they started playing the higher ranked teams, the Minnesotas, Wisconsins, they kind of dominated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they've really improved kind of steadily as the year has gone on. They really, yeah, as you said, had that game against Oakland. I think the Oakland game and the Penn State game start Big Ten play. That was a not great game for them either. But since then, you know, just the Minnesota game has really been the bad one for them. And, you know, they're just, you know, just a really kind of balanced team. Obviously, people focus on Hunter Dickinson and what he's been able to do for them. But the group around them with Libbers and Mike Smith and, you know, Franz Wagner was a guy I thought would just have a super breakout year for them. And he's been really good. Like, he affects the game in so many different ways, but he also, like, is not a guy who is going to, you know, score 25 for them. Like, he's going to get his 13 points and, you know, two blocks and one steal and not have any turnovers, and it's just going to be a really solid performance.
All right, Tweet. So let's talk about the team that we all root for, Illinois, a little bit. Obviously, the ratings seem to suggest that things are going to be looking pretty good in the future. We've kind of lost a few close games. You expect maybe that luck to kind of fall more back into our favor, close out a few close games, and kind of finish out the Big Ten season strong.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about luck is it's not really predictable. So just because you've lost your close games in the past doesn't mean you're going to win your close games going forward. It just means, you know, you should have neutral luck if everything, you know, goes as expected. I mean, the interesting thing about them is, like, so they're eighth and they have those five losses. And you think, oh, yeah, okay, well, they're going to do really well going forward. And you know, you look at my predictions and I basically have them going 5-4, you know, the rest of the way, assuming the schedule plays out the way it's listed right now. So, you know, if they go 5-4, you guys are probably going to be not super happy about the way they're playing.
No.
That's why it's a prediction, right? You know, maybe 5-4, maybe 9-0, you know, somewhere between that range.
One or the other. Yeah.
One or the other. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like 5-4, it could be 6-3, but it could be 4-5. So, so I guess the point is, you know, it's just a grind. Like this conference is obviously a grind, and when you have, you know, you're talking about the upcoming schedule. Like, just think about the fact you have Iowa, you have Wisconsin twice, you have Michigan, you have Ohio State on the road to conclude things.
Yeah, I think those last two home losses were pretty devastating in terms of. You lose to Maryland, you lose to Ohio State, who I guess in both cases are kind of ranked behind you. That's where, when you're looking at a Big Ten title, those are games you can't really afford to lose. And now you kind of have this gauntlet of tough games on the road and tough games at home. So you kind of don't have much leeway in terms of, if you want to compete for Big Ten title.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's going to be tough to win the regular season title, to make up ground on Michigan with that kind of schedule. It's not even clear to me exactly how the title is going to be determined. Has there been like an announcement on that, like with respect to you just going by straight winning percentage? I mean, I assume that's what they're doing, but
I guess, yeah, probably similar to whatever they did in football, I would imagine. So change the rules to help Ohio State. Yeah, exactly. yeah. Well, hopefully everyone gets their games in, but I think one thing a lot of people don't know about you is you didn't get your start like in college basketball. You were in like meteorology, right? Like, can you sort of walk us through how you got into this level of college basketball statistics and predicting and all that stuff? Because it's so interesting to us how you kind of got here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I was starting out, there really was no like field in terms of like sports analytics or whatever. So it wasn't even a thought that occurred to me, you know, when I was in college, and I just kind of dabbled in it as a hobby, as most people in the field do. For a while, but yeah, I was a meteorologist really for about a dozen years. Mm-hmm. Not on TV or anything, but working for the government. And I mean, the thing about being a meteorologist is that you're constantly making predictions, and you constantly have to live in like a world where you're making like probabilistic predictions. So you're not saying, hey, you're going to get 10 inches of snow 3 days from now. Like it's, mm-hmm. you're talking about this might happen or this might happen. And that is something I'm really interested in, and obviously something that crosses over well to you know, any sport, but certainly college basketball, making predictions in that. And that's more or less like the field I came from to jump into this. You know, this started as a hobby, and you know, I was kind of fortunate when I got out of college, like the whole, you know, money ball thing was kind of taken off in baseball, and that really inspired me to get to work in college basketball. The work of I always give a shout out to Dean Oliver, who published Basketball on Paper, kind of the first like basketball analytics book that had like widespread attention, and that's what got me into it, and eventually was able to kind of turn it into a business.
So what's more difficult to predict, college basketball or the weather?
Well, I would say probably the weather. But the one thing about the weather is like, you know, you think like you guys are talking about, you know, social media and like people complaining about my ratings or something like that, which obviously happens. But, you know, if you make a bad weather forecast, like everybody's affected by that, you know, only a small subset of the population really care about college basketball, but everybody has an interest in the weather at some point, even if they don't know it. Like if they just make a plan, you know, plans to go play a round of golf or something, and mm-hmm. it rains on them when they weren't expecting it. Like, you know, you're going to hear about it. So
John Rothstein is very confused by that statement you just made.
He's never played a round of golf, right?
No, just that only a small percentage of the population cares about college basketball.
That's right. Yeah. He's very confused.
Yeah.
He's
very confused. Oh my God. Right. But it's true. Like people, you know, everybody has a stake in the weather at some point. And there's just a lot more on the line. You know, even like I'm just making like trivial stuff here around a golf, but like, you know, if you have a severe weather outbreak where there's tornadoes and stuff, like there are people's lives on the line. So, you know, that never happens in college basketball. So it's definitely a more profound experience making predictions for the weather.
Right. All right. So you're a well-known college basketball guy, and you've shared your work with Daryl Morey. Was that an evil genius plan to ruin the NBA by encouraging more threes and layups?
No, I mean, I think people came around to that. But what's wrong with threes and layups? You guys don't like that?
No, I like it.
I like threes and layups. No one likes defense.
Just the diversity of play when you've got, like, in college, say, the mid-range, you kind of see a lot of different styles versus the NBA. It's kind of homogenous.
I guess. I mean, I'm not one of those guys that hates the NBA a whole lot. You're going to hate me now, but I honestly think like the college rules should veer more towards the NBA. Like to me, the 24 second shot clock is like, you know, the way modern basketball should be played. I'm like tired of seeing, you know, Virginia walk the ball up the court for 10 seconds and get in their offense. Like, you know, let's go here. Let's have some action at all times. So So anyway, I don't know. I'm like pro watching, you know, offenses that are able to get good looks from three and able to get to the rim. I don't think it's like quite as easy as people think to run an offense like that. But but anyway, it wasn't part of my plan, but I think people would have figured that out anyway.
All kidding aside, though, have you been offered by like an executive or someone within an organization to help out?
So, I mean, I do consult for an NBA team that shall remain nameless currently. So, so I haven't, you know,
Utah Jazz.
I haven't necessarily.
Blink twice if it's the Jazz.
I haven't been offered, you know, an assistant GM position or anything like that. Let's put it that way.
Well, you never know what's in the cards. That's got to be pretty cool consulting. Okay, but speaking of you know, NBA teams, we are kind of Bulls fans. You teach out there at University of Utah. You worked with Jim Boylan, who used to coach out there.
Right.
Is he kind of how the media portrays him to be, or?
How does the media portray him?
I think in Chicago, the meatball.
there.
Oh my God, that was literally the worst Freudian slip ever. I was going to say they kind of treated him almost as like this meatball that just kind of loves basketball, but doesn't know really what he's doing. And there were some funny like post game press conference quotes, and like he was just way in over his head. And I don't know, like, is that really what he's like?
I mean, I would say like most people. How can I answer this? Like he's a good dude. Like, you know, if you get to know him, like he's outside of the basketball sphere, like he's just a regular guy. Like inside the basketball world, I don't know that I'm necessarily, oddly, I don't think I'm like necessarily qualified to comment on it. I wasn't like at his practices or, you know, embedded with the team at all when he was out here, but obviously his tenure here was a little bit rocky. You know, it wasn't necessarily known as a player's coach or anything like that. And my view from afar is that, you know, he kind of has that same reputation with the Bulls. So
he's maybe more interested in manalytics versus analytics.
I've never heard that term, but I feel like that's literally Jim Boylan. Wow.
I like it.
So I guess like over the course of your career, you've probably talked, like we talked about with Daryl Morey, interviewing or just interacting with GMs and coaches. Do you have a favorite GM or coach that you've either shared information with or worked with?
Well, you know, I always liked Sam Hinkie just because he was quirky, I guess. Is that the word I'm looking for? Eccentric? He's not quite eccentric. He's somewhere between quirky and eccentric. But I always like how he, you know, pushed the boundaries with the Sixers and obviously went to places that no other GM was willing to go previously in terms of building that team and the way he did it. And he's just a really interesting dude who has like, you know, thoughts on things besides basketball that are kind of interesting. So I always like, I won't pretend to be like close friends with him or anything, mm-hmm. but anytime I've had a chance to like have a conversation with him, you know, I've always found it like really different from conversations that I have with other people.
Yeah, we trust the process over here. and who would you say is your favorite coach who just has no idea what your website does? Because I feel like there's the Jim Boeheims of the world who make some comments and really don't understand your website.
Yeah, I feel like probably, I mean, I don't know who would be the competition for Boeheim. Like, he's a guy who I you know, obviously am not surprised, like has no use for my work. But also I find like is his basketball opinions I tend to agree with, like, so I almost give him a pass for, I give him a pass for like ragging on me in press conferences. Like I'm okay with that. Like the guy's like, you know, he's entitled to do that. So I don't take offense.
Cool. So before we get to our final question, we've talked a lot about teams, but I am curious, how does your website rank referees? Like you've got 200 refs ranked. Are you like watching each of them and you're like, oh, that was a bad call. We're bumping them down.
Yep. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm like,
that's what we do. Know. So,
yeah.
And we give them great reviews all the time. Just flying colors.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Especially Ted Valentine, right?
Yes. Like TV Ted. Yeah. Yes. Our favorite. Yeah.
He's the best. No, I mean, it's so the ref rankings are all based on, the quality of the matchup that the refs get assigned to. So it's, you know, if you're working the, you know, the Michigan Illinois game, like that's going to boost your rating. And if you're working some, you know, low level game in the Big South, like that's going to hurt your rating. So it's strictly based on the quality of games you're working, which assumes that you're only getting those games if you're like well thought of by the people who make those assignments. And those people are presumably influenced by feedback they get from coaches and things like that, in addition to like just the grading that they do. So yeah, the ref rankings might be the favorite part of my site. To the extent that I troll people on Twitter, it's usually with regard to that. Like, hey, you know, this guy's like the third rated ref in the country. And obviously everybody's like, oh, he sucks, man. I hate him. He always screws my team.
Okay, that's
literally, doesn't matter who you bring up, you know, you get that reaction.
That's literally what we did though, because like with the Big Ten refs, how we're like ragging on like Bo Borowski and Terry Weimer. And it's like those are like the best refs. And I'm like, these guys suck. Like, how do they miss that call? And it's like, we're literally those guys. So we appreciate it. The trolling is very fair, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. My other favorite is that I've been meaning to maybe, you know, like write a blog post about this, but you can go through Twitter and you can find people just commenting on the fact that their conferences refs are the worst in the country. You know, and it just defies expectation. Like, you really think the Big Ten's refs are worse than, you know, the Big South? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Everybody thinks their refs are the worst.
Do you actually want me to answer that question? No, we love it. Cool. All right. So we've like a final question.
Scared about this final question.
We've really built it up. So let's say you're tasked with coaching a D1 basketball team. Okay. We're going to do some rapid fire scenarios. Just like first off the bat thought on what you do. Okay. So you're a D1 coach. Your best player gets in foul trouble. Are you aggressive or conservative? Are you keeping him in the game, or are you sitting him early to save him for the second half?
It depends on who it is. You know, if it's a guy who gets into foul trouble and is foul prone, and especially if it's a big, like I'm fine sitting him. If it's a guard who's not very foul prone, generally I'm going to be pretty aggressive about it and leave him in.
That's definitely fair. Okay. In terms of timeouts, are you saving them for down the stretch, or are you using them to stop the other team's momentum?
I'm saving them for the most part, and I'm really saving them. Hmm. Yeah, I'm really saving them for, I'm definitely more like Roy Williams in that sense, where I don't like to use timeouts early in the game. My pet peeve is really when guys use they're out of timeouts late, especially they're behind, especially in a free throw situation. Like, you just see the weirdest thing to me is like, it's a close, you know, there's 3 seconds left or whatever. And the other team's at the free, you know, you're down 2 and the other team's at the free throw line, and they take their last timeout like before that last free throw, you know, so that like if they miss that free throw, like the game's over. So that's my pet peeve, really my pet peeve on timeouts, is like, don't call your last timeout before the last free throw is taken. You have to save it, because if it's a missed free throw, you need to call timeout to, you know, have any chance of scoring at that point.
All right. I think I know the answer to this next one, but offensive defensive philosophy. Are you up-tempo, slow on offense, and then man-to-man or zone, or what are you doing on defense?
Well, I mean, I don't like – that's a hard question to answer in absolutes. I'd like to construct my team with the personnel that we can play up tempo. Let's put it that way. I'm obviously pro up tempo, but you know, if I don't have that personnel, if I'm coaching some, you know, crappy program that is at the bottom of the conference, like you probably can't just play up tempo for the sake of playing up tempo. But I do prefer to watch at a faster pace. So I guess I'd prefer to play that way, but I understand that not every coach has the ability to do that. And so I try not to be, you know, even though I rag on Wisconsin, like, I get why they're doing that, and they're very successful. So, like, you know, more power to Greg Gard.
All right, a few more here. Recruiting, are you going for, like, the 4-year development guy, or are you just going with the one and done, most athletic?
Well, you have to be careful. Like, you know, I mentioned the Luka Garza is the ideal situation. Like, I'd love to get guys like that who just, like, find guys who aren't good enough to make it, you know, to declare in their first year or two, and who stick around for a while. But, you know, the flip side of that is like the guys who are one and done, so, you know, aren't good enough to like contribute that first year. Like you want to stay away from those guys. And I think coaches are kind of getting smarter about that, where, you know, they're seeing what's happening now with Duke and Kentucky and realizing that's, you know, not a great approach, or not a great approach, at least for building a college program. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to find the guys who are going to be with me for 4 years and aren't good enough to go to the NBA and try to build a program that way. It sounds lame,
right?
That's
a great recruiting pitch.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. Great recruiting pitch. Don't say that in the living room. We don't think you're going to make the NBA, but right. You think you'll be here for 4 years, so come play for me so I can keep my job.
Yeah, I can probably sell some guys on that, can I? I don't know. But yeah, find those guys that don't have a position in the NBA. I guess it's really the Villanova approach that works best. You know, find the guys that, you know, do have a role in the NBA but aren't one and done. Like, those are hard guys to find, but if you can do it, you're going to be really successful.
Jay Wright's got it figured out. All right, you're up 3 with 10 seconds left. Are you fouling? Or are you letting them play it out?
With 10 seconds left, I'm probably – it depends who I'm playing. You know, I'd like to – you know, they're really – you can't foul with 10 seconds left, but if you can foul with 6, like, that's pretty good. If you're playing a team that has, you know, 5 shooters on the floor, you know, you probably want to foul, but – If you're playing Illinois, who might only have like 2 or 3 shooters on the floor.
Whoa, not a lot of whoa. Free throws. Not a lot of free throw shooters.
We knew you hate our team.
Yeah. See, you have, you know, not a lot of free throws on Illinois.
You have a monster rebounder that I would be concerned about. But,
that's true. Who can't shoot
probably
free
not
throws
fouling
great.
Enough.
Yeah.
We always hear in the tournament, they're like, the announcers are like, you don't need a 3 here. When is that not true? Like, at what point? At what point should you just chuck it up?
Yeah, I'd like to give credit to the person on Twitter who said this, but like, if somebody said, if you're watching a game and the announcer says you don't need a 3 here, you do need a 3 here.
Plenty
that's
of time.
That's the rule.
Plenty
the rule
of time.
To live by. Even, you know, even when you're up, even when you're down 2, like, if you're down 2 with 10 seconds left and they're like, you don't need a 3 here, like, you really do need a 3 at that point. Like, you obviously don't want to force one up, but if you get an open 3 in that situation, a 3 there is so much better than a 2. Because a 2 just ties the game.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to overtime. A 3, you know, wins it or puts you ahead at least. So even in that situation, like, a 3 is far preferable. You'd be surprised at, like, the comparison. Like, a contested 3 by a good shooter is better than a reasonably easy 2. So, yeah. So basically at the end game, if you're behind, you always need a 3. Unless you're tied or down 1, obviously. But if you're down 2 or more, like, you need a 3.
Go for it, yeah.
That is good to know. All right. Last question. This one's pretty open-ended. Is there a strategy that's underutilized, whether it's like offensive style, maybe it's like playing a tall lineup, anything like that, that teams, you see teams like not doing that you think they should do more of?
Oh man. Well, I'm sure there is. And you put me on the spot and my brain just sucks when I get put on the spot. So I'm not sure that anything like comes to mind at the moment.
You don't want to reveal your secrets for the team that you're consulting. We understand.
Yeah, a lot of NBA execs listen to the pod.
Yes,
so we understand.
We understand.
I mean, I don't
want to give it away.
I'll give you this one, is that, you know, generally like open threes, like early in the shot clock are, you know, by good shooters are good shots. Like, there's nothing more annoying than watching a game. A good shooter takes an open 3 early in the shot clock, misses it, and the knee-jerk reaction from whoever is, you know, the analyst on the game is like, oh, you can get that shot anytime. Like, I really don't like that shot right
there.
Of course,
me. Oh, my gosh.
They only say that, right, because it missed. So it's an easy comment to make. But really, you can't get that shot anytime, especially if you're a good shooter. Like, the defense is obviously, like, trying to take that away from you. So if you get that early in the shot clock, like, you know, you don't need to do this, like, hickory high crap where you have to make 6 passes on every possession. Like,
yeah,
get that early look. Like, college defenses, you know, especially against good teams, like, they're pretty sophisticated. Like, they're trying to take that away. So if you get that, definitely take the shot. So I guess if there's one thing I wish I'd see teams do more, it's not pass up shots like that.
Yeah. Okay. 1 second. One last question. Are you sure you don't hate our team? After like loving Iowa and Wisconsin all podcast.
Well, you know, it's also like, just the reason I don't hate you guys is because the team looks out of place, right? Like, they look out of place in my ratings, you know, top 10 and then with 5 losses. So I actually root for their success because
thank
people
you.
Are like,
that's all we, yeah, that's all we need to do.
What's
that.
Going on here,
yeah,
right?
Thank you. Yeah.
We're that team when I'm like, wait, if your team's top 10, you're telling me Illinois is actually number 8. We're the team who's out of place.
Yeah. Right. So I wish nothing but the best for you guys.
Thank you. And us to you the same, Ken. Thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with us. I think my favorite part was the guarantee, 9-0 in the conference for here on out. You can take that to the bank. You can tweet at him, if Illinois fans, if we lose a single game from here on out, because it was guaranteed according to the metrics. But again, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you on the next one. ILL.